Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I'm going to spend a fair amount of time on this absolutely sensational film, What is a Woman? You're going to love it. I am so impressed. But before I get there, I want to say a few things about all our preoccupation with race and gender and, you know, the bands and all that sort of stuff, because it's reached a point of absurdity. Now, there are various kinds of knowledge we can possess about the world or not, including, for example, when it comes to what's known as synthetic knowledge that's informative about the world. We can draw distinctions between, for example, our knowledge of the laws of science, as it includes the laws of physics, chemistry, biology, psychology, and so forth, which cannot be violated and cannot be changed, versus particular historical facts, you know, reports about, just to offer a controversial example, 9/11 right now. There's someone calling themselves 9/11 revisionists who's seeking to defend Judy Wood's account of directed energy weapons having been used to destroy the Twin Towers. And I was a very strong proponent of Judy way back when, actually in 2006, 11 November. I began interviewing her on my radio shows, where I was then pioneering interaction between computer and radio. So I'd give the report on the radio, but have everyone go to her website, and we'd discuss videos and stories and reports and charts and all that. We did this 15 times over the next couple years. 15 times. And when I organized the first conference for scholars for 9/11 Truth on the Science and Politics of 9/11 right here in Madison at the Radisson, I gave Judy Wood an unprecedented 3 hours to speak. 3 hours. Now, of course, in my academic life, I've been involved in hundreds of conferences, conventions, and the like. No one at any of those events or any other of which I am aware was ever granted 3 hours to speak. But I gave Judy Wood 3 hours. Nevertheless, it reached a point where I no longer thought Dews was a plausible account, though I regarded it as far superior to nanothermite, which to my understanding is still being pushed by some members of Architects and Engineers, which is among the reasons I regard Architects and Engineers and Judy Wood and her Dew group to be limited hangouts, because they're promoting false accounts of how the towers were destroyed. But not only that, they will not address neither who was responsible or why. And without understanding who is responsible, why, you cannot get a firm grasp of what happened. Well, when it comes down to particular facts, there are, in addition to the laws of nature, by the way, in particular facts, such as whether a Boeing 767 hit the South Tower, the evidence is very striking, because since the laws of physics cannot be violated, it cannot be changed, if we're witnessing a violation of laws of physics, you know you're witnessing a fantasy, a fabrication, a fake. The plane is traveling too fast in the videos to be structurally sound. It would have come apart physically in the air. Pilots for 9/11 Truth have documented this in their 9/11 intercepted video. Plus, the plane makes an impossible entry into the building. It simply disappears into the building in the same number of frames, its whole length, in the same number of frames it passes through its whole length in air. Well, that's a physical impossibility. Then you have the nose-out phenomenon, and the nose actually breaks through at the other end. Well, that's ridiculous. The nose is the most fragile part of the plane. And it couldn't possibly, had that been a real plane, have traversed the building and come out intact, as we see in the video. So we know something is wrong. Well, there's another kind of knowledge known as analytic. We're not talking about the laws of the physics or the world or particular facts about events in the world, but we're talking about the meaning of words and the nature of mathematics. These are things that merely depend upon assumptions that define a language framework. For example, we can know if John is a bachelor than John is unmarried, because a bachelor, the word bachelor is defined as unmarried adult male. So if John's a bachelor, then John's unmarried. If, now that doesn't mean John is a bachelor, that's a question about empirical fact. Then you have elementary mathematics, 2 + 2 = 4. You can prove this. If you take, for example, you know, use a stroke methodology, and 2 represent 2 strokes, 2 + 2 = 4 strokes. There are ways in which you can prove this, but it's all something that does not require observation, experiment, or measurement. Now, in my research about evolution and mentality, the relationship between biology and behavior, I spent a fair amount of time addressing variations between the races. There are variations between the races with regard to average IQ, for example, as tested by IQ tests, standardized tests, which have been voluminously studied. These differences in average intelligence remain. It appears to have been a function of evolution. All human life originated out of Africa and then diverse spread north into different regions where the locales, the geography, the weather was significantly different. In the savannas of Africa, you don't have major variations in weather. Hunter-gathering worked very successfully in Africa. No necessity to anticipate the future. No necessity to store up nuts for the winter. But in other regions, that wasn't the case. The phenomenon known as genetic drift is talking about, you know, populations that are in semi-isolated situations and dealing with diverse environmental variables, which leads to the evolution in specific ways that vary, some very subtle, others not, from those of other groups from the same original genetic population that have produced genetic diversity such that studies of genetics by anthropologists have differentiated perhaps as many as, and it depends how specific you're going to go, maybe 23 different racially distinguishable, including various tribes in the South Pacific on islands, which are conveniently isolated. So you have genetic drift taking place there. Darwin, of course, did his famous work on the Galapagos Islands about turtles and birds and so forth, which were developing there because they have an evolutionary history of their own. And the differences, for example, that I was reporting in my book, The Evolution of Intelligence, are humans the only animals with minds, which when you properly understand the nature of mentality is emphatically no, shows that there are these differences that if you assume whites have an average IQ of 100, then Asians have an average IQ higher than 100, oh, maybe 108. Blacks have a lower average, around 80. And there are all kinds of cultural reasons, for example, including that slave masters weren't happy with strong, intelligent slaves and tend to kill them off, so they weren't reproducing into the next gene pool. And of course, there was importation from Africa. And by the way, it turns out that slave owners who are most involved in this happen to be Jewish. The Jews, by the way, tend to have a higher average IQ even than Asians. So you got a kind of a hierarchy ranking. Now, this doesn't mean that there aren't other physical attributes. For example, if you look at the NFL or the NBA, you can see the overwhelming predominance of black athletes. I think that leads to a very appropriate inference that blacks are athletically superior to whites. I mean, just look at the proportions. I think that, you know, that's a game where ostensibly it's motivated by a desire to win and they want the best players and blah, blah, blah. And well, I believe the NFL, to a lesser extent, the NBA, but it may be the NBA as well, are rigged. I mean, the bookmakers, all this. I got a guy who, you know, regularly informs me about betting odds and who's going to win big games, and I've never known him to be wrong. But there are other respects in which blacks and whites are going to be similar, but basic physiology. I was therefore kind of stunned today to see an article in the Wisconsin's A Journal, Bias Leads to Misdiagnoses. New York. Racial bias built into a common medical test for lung function is likely leading to fewer black patients getting care for breathing problems, a new study suggests. As many as 40% more black patients in the study might have been diagnosed with breathing problems if current diagnosis assisting computer software were changed, the study said. Doctors have long discussed a potential problem caused by race-based assumption built into diagnostic software. It's news to me. If you're designing diagnostic software, why would you build in racial bias? There's no reason to believe there's the racial differences in these particular respects. Now, if it were to turn out there were, then obviously it ought to be taken into account. The study, published Thursday in JAMA Network, that's a journal of the AMA, which I have known to be used for political purposes before I got into research on JFK, because the editor-in-chief was abusing the journal to promote a false account of the assassination, and it led me to infer that perhaps some of us with special background and abilities, such as my own in epistemology, methodology, and the philosophy of science, ought to become involved. Offers one of the first real-world examples of how the issue may affect diagnosis and care for lung patients, said Dr. Dashali Ivas, a pulmonary care doctor at Mass General Hospital. So I want to know, what in the world are they talking about? The results are exciting to see published, but it's also what we'd expect from setting aside race-based calculations. And mind you, I don't believe there are race-based calculations in medicine. Why the hell would there be? Said Vias. was an author of an influential 2020 New York Journal of Medicine article that cataloged examples of how race-based assumptions are used in making doctors' decisions about patient care. Now, if you have a background of empirical knowledge when dealing with patients who are, say, Asian, Black, Native American, and so forth, you may well find there are race-based differences in there that require different forms of medical treatment. But get this. For centuries, some doctors and others have held belief that there are natural racial differences in health, including one that Black people's lungs were innately worse than those of white people. I just got to tell you, this is so effing absurd, I cannot believe it. Why would anyone think Black people's lungs were innately worse than those of white people? I mean, this is just ridiculous. That assumption ended up in modern guidelines and algorithms for assessing risk and deciding on further care. Test result would just need to account for or correct for a patient's race or ethnicity. Well, if there's a racial factor of which I'm unaware, then of course that would be appropriate to factor in. But this appears to me utter propaganda. I submit to you, this is on the line of trying to justify reparations for Blacks on the ground that they have been abused by the medical system. Now, mind you, we're even getting reports that mathematics is racist, right? Can you believe that? 2 + 2 = 4, that's racist. Why? Because Blacks do less well than whites or Asians who are superior in mathematics. They just don't do as well. And this has been attributed to racial bias in mathematics, not in the groups that are not doing as well. They don't do as well on standardized tests. This has led to the absurdity of abolishing standardized tests for college admission. That means you're tossing away an objective measure of background ability and achievement. I mean, it's going to turn our colleges and universities into remedial education facilities. It's going to be immensely damaging. This is very much along the line of those who argue that because there are disproportionately more Blacks incarcerated, there must be a bias in the judicial or law enforcement system ignoring the fact that Blacks commit disproportionately more of the crimes. If you look at the proportion of those who are committing the crimes, then the incarceration is roughly approximately right because Blacks are committing overwhelmingly more crimes. So what I'm saying here is you can take the most objective area of inquiry, which, you know, pure mathematics, for example, and claim there's a racial bias when there's no possibility of any racial bias there. If you wanted to talk about in the instruction of mathematics or in the ability to deal with mathematics or in mathematical computational ability, of course there are going to be differences. But there are differences from person to person among the same, say, white community. Of course. Of course. But saying that, you know, mathematics is inherently racist is frankly absurd. That's an intellectual atrocity and can't possibly be true. Any more than saying definition, defining, saying if John is a bachelor, then John is unmarried. That can't possibly be false, given the meaning of the words involved. But if Blacks, say, aren't very good at reasoning in some contexts, I mean, could you even claim that definitions are inherently biased and racist? Some cases, of course, you can have what are known as persuasive definitions. Calling the Dallas Cowboys America's team, for example, is presuming what may very well not be true, to wit, that everyone is enthusiastic about the Dallas Cowboys. At one time, that may have been true of their cheerleaders, at least among men. But the fact of the matter is, you got to distinguish between logic, evidence, types of knowledge, and ability to utilize that knowledge. This thing about lungs just looks to me completely absurd. Now, that's kind of background, because there's a preoccupation with race and gender that has gone completely wacky and haywire. We got a Washington Post article accusing bigoted right-wing extremists of inciting anti-democracy Target boycott. Number one, how can a boycott of consumers of not shopping somewhere be anti-democratic? That's democracy. So how can it be anti-democratic? And why are those who are boycotting Target right-wing or extremists? much less bigoted. What makes that? That's because there's Democrat presupposition built in that everyone should be equally enthusiastic about pride events and the LGBT plus. I mean, they get stringing out so many variations. The Washington Post is receiving pushback for publishing an article paying conservatives to support the Target boycott as extremists and opponents of democracy. This, again, I'm telling you, is a kind of propaganda to which we're being besieged every single day. The Washington Post published an article titled, Target Gets Caught in Cultural Crossfire Over Pride Month Items. And month? Why is there a Pride Month? You know, the veterans of the United States get one day, Memorial Day, but if you're queer, you get a month? Give me a break. I mean, this is just so frankly absurd and unjust. Frankly, it's not equitable at all. They publish equity versus equality. Equality means everyone being treated equal. They don't want that. They want equity. Equity means getting what you deserve. They think they deserve preferential treatment, which, by the way, is the opposite of equality. So don't get let yourself be played by this equity versus equality nonsense. Equity is bias. Equity is prejudice. Equity is presumes certain groups are entitled to benefits and certain other groups are not entitled to. It's the opposite of equality. Equity versus equality. It was very clever to introduce this concept into discourse without it being properly defined. The article about supposed right-wing extremism stemming from a retail boycott begins with the account of a female customer allegedly upset because Target was carrying Pride Month merchandise. The woman reportedly used her own scissor to cut her Target credit card in front of guest services at a Target location in South Florida and informed them, I am never shopping here again. That's something an American's entitled to do for crying out loud. The manager of the store said there were several tense encounters that workers have reported over LGBTQ plus items. Ticked off customers allegedly accused Target of shoving your woke agenda down our throats, and boys were repeatedly called child groomers. Well, that's an opinion one's entitled to have in America until the Democrats finish stamping out the First Amendment, as they're trying to do with the Second. Here I can touch on bomb threats. I'm very doubtful about this, by the way. They're trying to play the victim card, targeting several Target stores in multiple states. However, local news said the bomb threats were made by an individual claimed to be angry Target was cowardly for turning their back on the LGBTQ community. So the bomb threats are coming from a gay guy decided to cater to the homophobic right-wing redneck bigots who protested and vandalized their store. Homophobic right-wing redneck bigots? Well, look, I may be not be wildly enthusiastic about the gay-lesbian movement, but I don't hold any grudge against them. I'm a different strokes for different strokes kind of guy. But I do find it offensive when they're rubbing it in our faces. Let everyone have the privacy and discretion for their own personal sexual relationship. We don't need to tell the world. The article, written by a retail reporter and business reporter, noted Target decided to pull some items because of the backlash. Queer and transgender designers blamed domestic terrorists for Target taking their controversial products off the shelf. Domestic terrorists, right? If you don't buy into the Democratic agenda, if you don't buy into gay lesbian alliance and all that, you're a domestic terrorist. Didn't you know? The article painted the Target boycott with a broad brush. Conservatives are upset the national chain was selling LGBTQ merchandise. No, actually, I don't think anyone gives a damn if Target wants a public, you know, market LGBTQ merchandise. Just don't shove it down our throats. However, the article did not mention the boycott really took off after it was revealed a big box chain was selling tuck-friendly bathing suits LGBTQ onesies for babies and products from a transgender designer promoting Satanism, violence, and drug use. Though Pride Month and other inclusivity initiatives have been around for years, they've increasingly become litmus tests for consumers, forcing companies to fully commit on social issues or yield to critics, the article read. Target, one of the largest American general merchandise retailers, said it has offered products celebrating Pride Month for more than a decade. That may well be. But they hadn't put them out in the front of the store. And of course, we haven't had a whole month devoted to honoring gays and lesbians. Why the hell do they deserve any more honoring than, say, veterans, for example, or national heroes or sports figures or whatnot? This is just absurd. The article cited experts on extremism. That's your average Democrat politician, of course. The point of anger at right-wing influencers for inciting an anti-democracy movement. But as I say, there's nothing anti-democracy about consumers using their pocketbook to support or not companies, stores, and products they like. Lindsay Schibner, who studied violent movements for the anti-extremism washed-up Western State Center, told The Post, it's like not like any of this is unpredictable. We'd always know exactly where these sort of anti-democracy actors are going to point to next. But the increase in threats and harassment from anti-democracy movements in the U.S. has become so frequent, this is something that absolutely needs to be planned for. I think it's great. There's a protest. My God, they weren't protesting when Antifa and BLM were out in the streets rioting, looting, and committing arson. Hell, they were describing that as mostly peaceful. They went right with the program. So here you have people who are not enthusiastic about the LGBT program and don't want to buy there. They're being described as extremist, domestic terrorists. The LGBTQ Antifa, the Antifa and BLM people were not being described as domestic terrorists when they are absolutely are domestic terrorists. So this is another way in which language is being used to promote a political agenda. Schumer claimed that bigoted and anti-democracy groups, begging the question by taking for granted they're anti-democratic when there's no reason to think they are, will attempt various boycott tactics to see what will stick. Sarah Kate Ellis, president and chief executive of LGBTQ media advocacy group GLAAD, G-L-A-A-D, said, as soon as you cede ground to extremists, you give them more permission. That's exactly what a politician in Washington did by tolerating the BLM and the Antifa riots during the summer of love. Ellis claimed Republican lawmakers such as Marjorie Taylor Greene demonize the LGBTQ community. Well, I don't think so. The Washington Post article stated, according to experts on it, who the hell are these? The boycotts and the threats and harassment that have extended from them are part of a diffuse but focused campaign inflamed by influential conservative, exploiting TikTok and right-wing media. This is just ridiculous. This is just making it up. This is bullshit. The article named conservative commentator Matt Walsh as an anti-LGBTQ rabble-rouser who stirs up boycotts against woke companies. And, of course, Matt is the one who produced What is a Woman? A sizable number of Twitter reactions to Washington Post laughed off the accusations that the Target boycott was based on extremism of any kind. Good. A person explained today in the narrative, if you shop, stop shopping at places that endorse child sex changes, you're an extremist. Exactly right. A Twitter user said, parents not wanting their children being exposed to a satanic sex cult while they're shopping at Target is not an example of extremism. Real extremism offering LGBTQ-themed onesies for babies. Another user stated, you're calling a normal and fairly muted response to a corporate sponsor to people in our social norms extremism. Target has lost billions in market value since the boycott began and the retailer's stock is recently down 14%. I like that. That's totally appropriate. Similar for Bud Light. Similar for Walmart. Now, Chick-fil-A is falling into the same pattern. Consumers are protesting. Why mix politics with retail stores? Why mix politics with food, with a fried chicken sandwich? Give me a break. Give me a break. Meanwhile, get this, and I find this fascinating. Daily Wire's controversial What is a Woman sparks firestorm. In a whirlwind 24-hour period, the Daily Wire faced unexpected challenges and triumphs surrounding its documentary, What is a Woman? On Twitter initially, some individual within the platform attempted to sabotage the film's visibility, with a restriction being placed on it due to alleged misgendering. However, thanks to the intervention of Elon Musk, who has a significant following on Twitter, the film received a tremendous boost and garnered attention from millions of people. Co-CEO Jeremy Boring expressed gratitude to those who supported the cause of free speech during this tumultuous period. He acknowledged both Elon Musk and Twitter for rectifying the situation, allowing the documentary to continue being available on the platform for the weekend. Boring even humorously referenced the Streisand effect, a phenomenon where attempts to suppress information inadvertently leads to its wider dissemination. The groundbreaking documentary, featuring Matt Walsh, explores the radical transgender craze and seeks to foster a meaningful conversation on the topic. By posting on Twitter for free viewing, the Daily Wire aimed to mark the one-year anniversary of its release and engage in an open dialogue. However, the platform initially labeled the documentary as hateful conduct due to alleged instances of misgendering. That's what, not calling everyone by their preferred pronouns? Even Megyn Kelly has come up and said that's just rubbish nonsense. She's not going to do it anymore. Fortunately, Twitter later removed the tag and restored the film's visibility, enabling users to like, retweet, engage with it freely. I have retweeted it on my Twitter account, at Jim Fetzer. Elon Musk, a prominent figure on Twitter, of course, became a significant advocate for the documentary, not only acknowledged a mistake by Twitter, but also encouraged his substantial following to watch the film, highlighting its relevance to every parent. Musk's endorsement exponentially amplified the reach and impact of the documentary, turning it into a viral sensation. The Daily Tweet, Wire's tweet featuring the film garnered an astonishing 65 million views in less than 24 hours, thanks to Musk's support. This episode serves as a testament to the power of free speech and the unintended consequences it can arise when attempts are made to suppress certain viewpoints. Despite initial obstacles, the film managed to transcend its limitations and spark important conversation about gender and identity. It is a reminder of the critical role that platforms like Twitter play in facilitating diverse perspectives and allowing open dialogue on complex issues. By embracing a conservative perspective that champions free speech and the exchange of ideas, we can continue to foster meaningful conversation and drive our society forward. Precisely. This is why we had a golden age on the internet when anyone could say anything, let 1,000 flowers bloom, you could actually find all research pro and con against a given subject at the touch of your fingers by your laptop. No longer true, the amount of suppression. Meaning the Babylon Bee. Damning leak reveals Matt Walsh knew what a woman was this whole time. Nashville. A damning leak from the hacked emails that conservative commentator Matt Walsh has revealed. In spite of the question posed by his documentary, What is a Woman? He has actually known what a woman was this entire time. Stunning, disgusting, rank hypocrisy, said transgender former journalist Brian Stelter. We knew Walsh wasn't who he claimed to be, but now we have proof. Daily Wire CEO Jeremy Boring also expressed disappointment at the news. I dumped millions into Matt's documentary to discover the answer to this question. And it turned out he knew the answer this whole time. I feel betrayed, he said. On top of that, I found out he still subscribed to Harry's Razors. I feel like I don't even know him. Authorities say they are still searching for the alleged hacker and are warning people not to share the leaked emails, as it could radicalize whoever reads them against gender ideology and publishing time. Things have gotten worse for Walsh after someone posted the entirety of his Cowboy Bebop fanfic online. Wow. Love it. Now, incredible. Another. Listen to this. Matt Walsh, What Is a Woman, hits 165.4 million views on Twitter. Everyone is watching the movie they really don't want you to see. LifeSite News. After a chaotic day and a half of suppression and free speech victories, the groundbreaking What Is a Woman documentary has reached over 65 million views by Sunday at 7 p.m. on Twitter. Numbers will continue to rise as the Daily Wire has left the film free to view on the platform over the weekend. Matt Walsh, Daily Wire podcaster and star of the film, shared on Saturday morning that in addition to the 110 million views, the movie had 120,000 retweets, figures he described as incredible. It's a movie they really don't want you to see. What Is a Woman? Watch the explosive documentary starring Matt Walsh free on Twitter for 24 hours. Fascinating. Fascinating. The milestone came out after Daily Wire's Friday night update, sharing the film that amassed over 78 million views in just 24 hours. With this number, the outlet decided to leave it up for the weekend. The rapid spread of the documentary followed Walsh's cinematic expose of gender ideology being suppressed by Twitter executives, a decision which, according to owner Elon Musk, was a mistake. The temporary censorship occurred after Daily Wire reached an agreement with the platform to stream the film for free in honor of its one-year anniversary. Twitter reportedly backed out of the deal due to certain scenes which featured characters misgendering others. I mean, he's illustrating what the hell is going on in the community. This is just absurd. Musk later resolved the issue and promoted the film on his own Twitter page, criticizing child mutilation and saying that every parent should watch the documentary. That post is now a pinned tweet on his account. Let me just say, I couldn't agree more about how important this film is, and that I want to share with you what's going on here. Well, we'll play a good part of it here. You'll be able to see it on the video version. Showing a birthday cake. Happy birthday, twins. They're blowing out the candles on their cake. Son has a football. Daughter has a tiara.
Being a dad is one of the great privileges of my life. Give my son a BB gun, and that's just about all the emotional support he needs. My daughter, on the other hand, I've heard people say that there are no differences between male and female. Those people are idiots. I'm a husband. I'm a father for, I host a talk show. I give speeches, I write books. I like to make sense of things. But making sense of females is a whole other matter. Even astrophysicist Stephen Hawking, who could come up with a theory on black holes, was completely dumbfounded by women.
Women, they are a complete mystery.
And now our culture is telling us that the differences between girls and boys don't matter. That if you identify as something, then you are that thing. How do we help our kids make sense of this when they're bombarded with conflicting messages about gender and identity? Forget trying to figure out women. The real question is, what is a woman?
As you grow, your body changes from that of a young girl to that of a woman. Soon, Molly will be a young woman, having dates, going to dances in lovely romantic dresses.
The boy's shoulders are broad and his body muscular, while the girl's body is more curved.
I'd like to know more about different kinds of hormones.
The presence of these hormones in the blood brings about many changes in the bodies of both boys and girls.
Being a woman is one of the things I like the best about myself. I think you'll like it too.
I like to come out here to think. Nature seems to always tell the truth, even when we don't want to hear it. Truth is, I'm not very good at fishing. But what is truth? Is there a truth? Is this what progress looks like? Can my boys really become girls? Do I have four daughters? Do I now have to pay for four weddings? Is there a son trapped in my daughter's body? If so, how do I get him out? Are any of my kids who they claim to be? Who are these people? Who am I? I better see a therapist.
In the state of Tennessee, I'm a licensed marital and family therapist, which basically means I've been trained up to think about like systems, family systems, how we were raised up, how that shapes who we are today.
So on your website, if you'll bear with me,
sure.
Quoting, you say, I use a combination of approaches in my therapeutic work, including anti-oppression, feminist, and narrative frameworks. I rely deeply on systems theory and understanding that individuals are products of and in dialogue with our surroundings, including our families, broader culture, workplaces, nature, and political climates. What does that mean?
Yeah. So thinking about the modalities that I use, I'm definitely informed by like feminist family therapy. And the idea is that we live in gendered worlds where there are certain imperatives that are placed on us about who we are and what we do based on how we've been gendered. From the minute I was assigned female, I was told, okay, these are the kind of clothing that you're going to wear. These are the type of play that you're going to engage in as a child. The path that maybe your life will take because of social expectation.
What do you mean by assigned female? Who assigns female?
Yeah, so most times people, when they're born, they're assigned a gender.
By the
doctors. Yeah.
Like, what do they base that assignment on?
So basically it's based on genitalia. So people looking at genitalia and deciding, okay, this is a girl or a boy. And we know now that that sex and gender are so much more than just this binary. Some women have penises, right? Some men have vaginas. That's not how gender works.
How do we know that that's not true? Where do we learn that from?
Yeah, well, I learned that from hearing from transgender people who've said, like, oh, I'm a trans woman. And just because I happen to have a penis, right, that doesn't mean that this is like who I am as a person, or that genitalia doesn't equal gender. Who they are, their gender expression, a trans woman is a woman.
With the fluidity of these things, how do I know if I'm a woman? You know,
that's a great question.
I like scented candles.
Yeah.
I've watched Sex and the City.
Yeah.
So how do I know?
Yeah, Matt, that question right there, like that question is like when it's asked with a lot of curiosity, right? That's the beginning of a lot of people's like gender identity development journeys.
If my mom who gave birth to me is a woman, mm-hmm. and my wife is a woman, though I haven't asked her, maybe I should. But if they're all women, and also the boy who sits down with you and says, I think I'm a girl, actually is one, then what is a woman?
Great question. I'm not a woman, so I can't really answer that.
I thought therapy would make me less confused. Am I the only one feeling this way? I need to hit the road and find out.
We're talking about gender in society. Let me start with a real basic question. What is a woman?
A woman?
I don't want to assume, but you guys are all women?
Yeah, we're women.
So how would you define it, like in the simplest terms?
That is hard.
Yeah, it is. It is a stumper.
A woman is someone that wants to be pretty and think of themselves as a delicate creature.
I'm pretty and delicate.
Okay.
I could be a woman too.
Yes, you could.
Defining womanhood is just a project of someone who identifies as a woman.
Yeah, but what do they identify? You see what I'm saying? What do they identify as? They identify as a woman, but what is that?
I honestly don't know.
It's a simple question. So why is it so hard to answer? This is going to take some serious investigation. For all of human existence, women were understood to be a certain thing. So what changed? No one can seem to answer the question now. Over 2,000 surgeries and counting, Dr. Marcy Bowers is the nation's preeminent sex change surgeon. Surely someone who does sex change surgeries can answer what a woman is. Dr. Marcy Bowers, first of all, thanks for talking to us.
My pleasure.
So you're a world-renowned gynecologist and surgeon. You're also a transgender woman. Can you tell me a little bit about...
No, I mean, I identify as a woman, but...
You're a woman, right.
I'm a woman with... I mean, that's my life, day-to-day, but I have a transgender history.
Hmm. So one thing on your website, it says gender-affirmed, GAV, gender-affirming vaginoplasty.
Mm-hmm.
What is that exactly?
Vaginoplasty is creation of a female vagina and vulva. We're altering the physical characteristics of the individual to fit better with a gender identity that is female.
This is all constructed from the penis?
Yes, that's right. The surgeries are quite refined in the sense that they really, not only do they look like female anatomy, but they also function that way for the most part. I mean, certainly it's a bit of a Faustian bargain. You know, it's not perfect.
Does anyone ever regret their surgeries? Well, we know they do, but how often do people regret their surgeries?
Well, actually, we don't know that they do. There are legitimate detransitioners, and there are people who truly feel that in their journey, they may have made a mistake. Now, fortunately, this is a really, really uncommon phenomenon.
I don't know if you've ever heard of people in the trans-abled community. These are people who are physically able-bodied but feel like they should be disabled or identify as such. For example, a man who has two arms but feels like he should have one. If a man in this kind of marginalized community went to the doctor and said, I want to have my arm cut off, do you think that...
That doesn't have anything to do with gender identity.
Well, it's someone's self-identity, how someone identifies.
That's someone who has and I'll accept it as a mental diagnosis, a psychiatric condition. I don't even pretend to know what aptamenophilia is all about. But somehow it's the idea that you're fascinated or charmed by having a limb or part of a limb missing.
Mm.
Okay, I would say that's... pardon my non-medical language, kooky.
You don't see any? You think this is totally irrelevant?
Yeah.
So the biggest, broadest question is, what is a woman?
A woman is it's a combination of your physical attributes and then what you're showing to the world and the gender clues that you give. And hopefully those match your gender identity.
The critics on the other side of this, of this issue.
There aren't many, but go ahead.
There aren't many who would disagree with what you're saying about...
Well, you know, the dinosaurs of the world are certainly out there. Yeah.
How long have you been running the shop here?
25 years.
Now, you had an incident here a little while ago that went really viral online. Lots of reaction in the public.
Aberdeen Councilwoman Tiesa Meskis confronted owner Don Suker about a sign he posted in his store.
One day I just put the sign up over here, and he came around the corner, and I thought, okay, I recognize him. I says, oh, I recognize you. You're our new city councilman. He says, no, I'm your new city councilwoman. So it was kind of on from there.
You know what? It's bullshit.
No, what you're spouting is bullshit.
No, it's not. Trans women are women, sir. That sign is bullshit.
I've been doing this 25 years. I've never had a problem with anybody, whether they're gay, transsexual, anything.
Now, you're saying councilman, this individual was saying, I'm a woman.
Right.
And you said you're not a woman. How do you know that that person is not a woman?
How do I know?
Yeah.
Well, common sense.
Trans women are women!
Doesn't the science say that if someone identifies as a woman, then they are?
No. Now, that's completely bogus. I don't care if you think you're a sheepdog and you come into my store. It don't matter to me. Just don't come in and try to shove that shit down my throat.
If it makes someone feel better, what about their feelings?
I don't give a shit about their feelings. I'm old.
What about the Star Wars universe? Jar Jar Binks, pansexual, do you think? Transgender?
Why would I even care?
If it's his truth.
Well, it ain't true.
You're not a scientist. You're not a gender studies major. Or are you?
No.
Okay. How do you know that you're a man?
How do I know that I'm a man? I guess because I got a dick.
Well, I guess Don isn't overthinking it. He admits he's not a gender studies major. Or at the very least, a doctor. Maybe I should go talk to one.
My name is Michelle Forcier, and I have a medical degree from University of Connecticut residency, University of Utah Pediatrics, and I've worked for a number of different Planned Parenthoods for 20 years. I do advanced contraception and abortion, as well as gender hormones, and sort of looking at the whole sort of schema of gender, sex, and reproductive justice.
So you've done a lot of work in this field. Could you just start by telling us?
Sure.
At what age can a child first begin to transition into another gender or identify themselves as a gender different from how they were born?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's research and data that show that babies and infants understand differences in gender. Some children figure out their gender really early. And the reason why we say, oh, that's interesting or important is because they're figuring out their gender identity is not necessarily congruent with their sex assigned at birth.
When the doctor sees the penis and says, this is a male, has the sex of male, that's an arbitrary distinction?
Telling that family, based on that little penis, that your child is absolutely 100% male identified, no matter what else occurs in their life, that's not correct.
So what is gender affirmation care? You're a big proponent of, if we walk through, a child is sitting down with you, is questioning their gender. What's the gender affirmation process?
Affirmation means that as a pediatrician, as someone who says my job is to provide the best medical care for you, is I need to listen really carefully. And how I put it in words for kids so that they can understand it is, tell me your story. Where have you been in terms of your gender and your gender identity? Where are you right now? And more excitingly, where would you like to be in the future?
Have you ever met a four-year-old who believes in Santa Claus?
Mm-hmm.
This is someone who believes that a fat man is traveling through the sky on a flying reindeer at lightning speed, coming down his chimney with presents.
Yeah.
Would you say that this is someone who maybe has a tenuous grasp on reality?
They have an appropriate four-year-old handle on the reality.
Agreed.
That's very real for them.
Agreed. But Santa Claus is real for them, but Santa Claus is not actually real.
Yeah, well, but Santa Claus does deliver their Christmas presents.
Well, yeah, but he's not real, though.
to that child they are.
When I see a child who, you know, believes in Santa Claus, and then let's say this is a boy and he says, I'm a girl.
Mm-hmm.
This is someone who can't distinguish between fantasy and reality. So how could you take that as a reality?
I would say that as a pediatrician and as a parent, I would say how wonderful my four-year-old and their imagination is.
Aren't kids famous for their active imaginations? Should we really let our children define reality?
If I say that I feel a certain way, then obviously you can't tell me I don't feel that way. But just because I feel that way, does that mean that it's true?
I mean, if it's your reality.
If it's your reality.
Truly, like, none of my business.
So we all have our own
identity.
Realities? What if I said, I want you to say that it's true that I'm a woman? Would you say that?
You're a woman.
I would also say that.
If you want.
Yeah.
I honestly don't care. Like, whatever makes you happy.
What's true to you can be false to me. So, like, it's like...
What if I said that it's true? My truth is that you don't exist. Does that mean you no longer exist?
I mean, if that's your truth, sure. I don't.
But
like,
you do.
I mean, if you're saying that I do, then I do.
Well, but even if I said that you don't, you still do, because we're having this conversation.
I mean, are we?
I think so. I mean, I thought...
That's what you think.
Well, I should have known it would be hard to define reality in Hollywood. I should probably look to the place where truth is the foremost pursuit. The American University.
What we do in gender studies is not just reduce gender to what psychologists might call individual differences, but rather thinking about gender. Now, it's not women and man, but gender as a social form, something that kind of infuses itself into virtually all aspects of social life.
Well, so,
we'll be right back with Matt Wall and What is a Woman.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. Time is over.
Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Waiting for Jim to come back. Got his coffee and get his break. And we'll get right back to his show. Remember, Revolution Radio is listener-supported, commercial-free. So come on down and join us at revolution.radio. And don't forget to check out the archives. All the shows on Revolution Radio, archived for your convenience. So we're waiting on Jim. So don't forget, I'm streaming over on Rumble now, 8 to 10 a.m. and Tuesday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Same old schedule, just a different spot. So don't forget, come on down and join me. Well,
Mitchell.
There's Jim.
Thanks for picking up the slack, my friend. Here we go with Dr. Patrick Gronska, Professor of Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies, University of Tennessee.
We're thinking about gender. Now, it's not women and man, but gender as a social form, something that kind of infuses itself into virtually all aspects of social life.
Let's talk about that, then. I guess we should start with, we've got gender and sex, right?
Yeah.
What's the difference between the two? Is there a difference?
I saw that in your questions and I thought, my goodness, this is what we spend an entire semester kind of thinking through. But what we tend to think about in the social sciences today is that sex refers to a set of biological characteristics and gender is a social construct or category. What I think is often misleading about that characterization is allowed to be sort of messy and complicated. But in that framing, when you split them up into these wholly discrete constructs, study scholars, and really more specifically people who study gender and sex, we're not talking about sexuality right now. It's in the kind of academic universe that I travel in is that we see how deeply gendered ideas, cultural ideas about masculinity, feminine maleness, and femaleness, both in humans and in lots of other animals.
So are gender and sex two different things?
Well, I think that they both are and they aren't. I'm comfortable saying that gender and sex are two different constructs, but they're deeply intertwined with each other.
We're talking about gender and sex, and there's a lot of controversies there. If we're talking about a trans woman has all of the male physical characteristics, so would that not be a male then? Couldn't we plainly say this person is a male?
Well, I guess it's like, why are you asking the question? I think I want to understand sort of why that's so important. So if someone tells
just
you...
To sort of understand reality, you know?
Well, I mean, I think when someone tells you who they are, you should believe them. So if a person says that they're a woman or they're a man, then that's them telling you their gender is. I'm not so sure what social... interactions would have to do with maleness or femaleness that would
I'm not even talking about social context. I'm just trying to start by getting to the truth, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really uncomfortable with that language of like getting to the truth again in social
Why is that uncomfortable?
Because that it sounds actually deeply transphobic to me. And if you keep probing, we're gonna stop the interview.
If I probe about what the truth is?
You keep invoking the word truth, which is condescending and rude. I'm saying to you...
How is the word truth condescending and rude?
Why don't you tell me what your truth is, and you're walking on 30 seconds more than ice before I get up.
What my truth is? Well, I don't think I really have a truth. I think that there's just the truth, like the reality. And so we should begin by trying to figure out what the reality is.
Uh-huh. And why are you concerned with when someone else tells you that they're a man, or even if they use the word male, why are you concerned with not believing them?
Well, you keep bringing it back to, you know, how do you respond in a social situation? But,
that's what I do. I'm a social scientist.
Well, right. But we're in a university. This is a place of understanding truth, isn't it? Or...
Absolutely. We pursue the truth, and I'm a social scientist, and that's what I do.
But you just said the truth is transphobic.
That you would say, if you're saying the truth is that I get to say, you're not a man, show me your genitalia, that's transphobic.
No, I don't want to see anybody's genitalia. I just mean, someone can make a statement about themselves that could be untrue. Like, for example, if I were to say that I'm a black man, would you accept that, or would you be skeptical?
Are you black? Are you African American? Are you biracial?
I don't think so.
You don't look that, and I don't think it doesn't sound like that's a genuine statement of who you are.
Okay, so that's my point. I could make a statement about who I am that's incorrect.
Of course, I think it's well established that human beings can lie, yes.
Or not even lie. I mean, I could just be mistaken.
Yeah.
I guess this all comes back, this all comes down to really one question. Especially women, gender, and sexuality studies. So what is a woman?
Why do you ask that question?
I just really like to know.
What do you think the answer to that question is?
Well, I'm asking. That's why I came to a college professor who this is what you do.
What other kinds of answers have you gotten?
A lot of like this, where you're not answering. I've gotten a lot of that. So
I think it's interesting that you say that some of the people you've interviewed have been reluctant to answer it. And I think that has a lot to do with the way the questions that preceded it and the way that you've conducted yourself in the interview.
How have I conducted myself?
How do you think you've conducted yourself?
You just really don't want to answer the questions, do you?
I came today very willing and enthusiastic about answering questions about women's and gender sexuality studies, which is
so you wanted to do. You wanted to answer questions about women's studies, and so shouldn't the first answer you should be able to provide is what exactly is a woman?
Well, for me, it's actually a really simple answer, and that's a person who identifies as a woman.
But what are they identifying as?
As a woman.
So what is that?
As a woman,
you know what a circular definition is?
I do.
It's sort of like what you're doing right now, where a woman is a woman.
Mm-hmm. Because you're seeking what we would call in my field of work an essentialist definition of gender. I think it sounds like you would like me to give you a set of biological or cultural characteristics that are associated with one gender or the other.
I'm not seeking any type of definition. I'm just seeking a definition.
Yeah, and I gave you one.
Well, now I can say I've been to college. Glad I didn't pay for it. Is there anyone willing to give me a straight answer? Ideally, somebody with a bunch of medical degrees on the wall. Dr. Grossman, thanks for talking to us. You're a psychiatrist, medical doctor, and you've done a lot of work in child psychiatry. What is transgenderism from a psychiatric standpoint?
The best way to approach it is by speaking about gender dysphoria, which is an intense loathing and discomfort with one's biological sex. They exist anywhere between 1 in 30,000 people and 1 in 110,000. It's important to distinguish those people from what's happening much more recently, which is kids that never had any discomfort or dysphoria, as it's now called, with their biological sex, and then quite suddenly, as preteens or as adolescents, they come out and they announce that they are gender fluid, or they start to question their sex. So first, let's define the terms sex and gender.
Yes, please.
Sex is biology. Sex is unchanging. It's based on chromosomes. 99.999% of the cells in the body are marked either male or female. Gender, on the other hand, is a perception. It's a feeling. It's a way of identifying. It's an experience. Okay, that's subjective.
It sounds like what you're saying is that if a man is male but thinks of himself as a woman, he's not actually a woman?
That's correct.
Male gametes. That's what makes me male.
No. Your sperm don't make you male.
Then what does?
It's a constellation.
In reality. In truth. Okay.
Whose truth are we talking about?
The same truth that says we're sitting in this room right now, you and I.
No. You're not listening.
If I see a chicken laying eggs and I say that's a female chicken laying eggs, did I assign female, or am I just observing a physical reality that's happening in the world?
Does a chicken have gender identity? Does a chicken cry?
Well,
does a chicken commit suicide? Let's frame it, because you're trying.
Well, chicken has sex like any biological organism.
Chicken has an assigned gender, but a chicken doesn't have a gender identity.
So we assign female to chickens when they lay eggs?
We assume they're female if they lay eggs.
Now, I was told that really everyone agrees with the current approach to gender and transitioning kids and all of that. And if you don't agree, that you're a dinosaur and a bigot. So are you a bigoted dinosaur?
I'm not bigoted and I'm not a dinosaur. I am rooted in reality and in science.
Whose reality?
There's one reality. The first race that I competed against a transgender athlete was during my freshman year. And once the gun went off, the two transgender athletes took off flying and left all of us girls in the dust. Throughout all 4 years of high school, I was forced to compete against biological males. I only competed against them in the sprinting events. But I raced against these athletes over a dozen times throughout the years, and every single time I lost.
Did they inch you out of medals that you would have won otherwise, or trophies you would have
won? They beat me out by 20 meters out of medals and qualifying spots. I missed out on qualifying for New England. I had to go in the long jump and the 4x200 meter relay, so I was forced on the sidelines in my own event, and if they were not there, I would have been able to qualify. So I missed out on so much throughout my high school career.
Did they win all the events or almost all the events?
Between the two of them, they won every single event they competed in.
How does that feel?
It is so frustrating and heartbreaking because we elite female athletes train so hard to shave just fractions of a second off of our time. And going into races knowing that we will never be able to win.
It feels like all that work gone to waste?
It does. After so many losses, it just gets to the point of, why am I even doing this? Why am I keep
training so hard and sacrificing so much just to place third and beyond.
Case in Connecticut, there were two male track runners,
trans girls,
right, and who decided that they were going to race against the girls. And you look at those individuals, you look at their times against the men, against the boys, so they were kind of middle of the pack. And then they're racing the girls, and they're, you know, first and second place. Is that indicative of some kind of unfair advantage that those individuals might have against the girls?
No, it's not indicative of an unfair advantage. And I think part of the proof of this is that more transgender girls are coming out in high school and still playing sports, and they're not winning. You know, the Connecticut case is the exception. It got a lot of attention because those two trans girls performed well, but there are many, many more trans girls competing in sports, and they don't excel.
Because at the end of the day, whether
or not you win a game is about how hard you work in your practice, and most of us aren't going to win. And that goes for transgender athletes, too.
Let's go, girls.
The norm is that transgender youth don't win that much in sports games.
Alana McLaughlin was very appreciative for Provost to take this fight. I don't know how appreciative is now, but she got a couple punches in.
It is very much the exception when a transgender young person does win.
And the tap!
And it's because there's not really an advantage to being trans. Only a few people are going to lead the pack. There are some slight differences, but does it translate to a competitive advantage? I think you'd be very hard-pressed to prove that. If there was a big advantage to being transgender in sports, then we would see transgender women totally dominate.
And over the last half of the pool, nobody will touch Leah Thomas.
Man, I feel like a woman.
Transgender swimmer Leah Thomas breaking barriers and records. But in a new article, Sports Illustrated calls the college senior the most controversial athlete in America.
Leah obviously helps us do better. Right? Leah's swimming really fast. Leah's performance helps the University of Pennsylvania swim team. The feeling of winning doesn't feel as good anymore because it feels tainted. There was a lot of things you couldn't talk about that were very concerning, like a locker room situation. If you even brought up concerns about it, you were transphobic. If you even bring up the fact that Leah swimming might not be fair, you were immediately shut down as being called a hateful person or transphobic.
But there's never any conversation. The coaches don't sit everyone down and acknowledge what everyone's really upset about.
So Penn actually brought in people high up in the athletic department to talk to us. They brought in someone from the LGBTQ Center. They brought in someone from the psychological services.
So you're upset about what's happening, and so you need psychological help.
Yeah, and they told us in this meeting, they said, look, we understand there's an array of emotions, but Leah's swimming is a non-negotiable. However, we can help you make that okay. That's what we care for.
So you're anonymous for this interview. Why did you decide that's... You can't have your face out there saying this.
They've made it pretty clear that if you speak up about it and you say anything negative, that, like, your life will be over in some way. Like, you'll be blasted all over the internet as a transphobe if you come out, and then you'll never be able to get a job. Like, anyone who wants to hire you will look you up and see you're transphobic, and your life will be over.
Let's say that I identified as a woman tomorrow, and I wanted to go into the same locker room where you are. Should I be allowed to do that? As long as I identify that way?
I don't know. I just feel that other women would be uncomfortable while you walk in there.
Ella dice que qué tú piensas acerca de que los hombres que son transexuales usen baños de mujer. ¿Tú crees que está bien?
No.
Pero dilo.
No, lo que piensas bien.
Controversy at a health club in Koreatown over the issue of gender.
That's right. Video of spa goers complaining was posted on social media.
I just want to be clear with you. It's okay for a man to go into the women's section, show his penis around the other women, young little girls under age. Your spa, we spa, condone that. Is that what you're saying? Like I asked. It's so he can stay there. He can stay there? Both sexual orientation. I see a dick.
Police identified the person involved as 52-year-old Darren Moreger of Riverside County. Moreger, who has been a registered sex offender since 2006, now faces 5 felony counts of indecent exposure.
Hello, I'm Congressman Mark Takano. Trans Month of Visibility is a time to recognize the strength, diversity, and resiliency of the transgender community. Together, we can make our country and our world a more accepting place by speaking out against transphobia at the source and supporting the trans community by getting the Equality Act signed into law.
Congressman, thank you for being here. Thanks for joining us. You are the first member of Congress who's a member of the LGBT community and also a person of Asian descent. You're also a big proponent of the Equality Act.
Yes.
What is the Equality Act? If you were to just summarize it very briefly, I know it does a lot.
The most simplest way to talk about the Equality Act is that it simply amends the 1964 Civil Rights Act to include sexual orientation and gender identity. So public accommodations is one area.
What's a way that someone who's LGBT could be discriminated in public accommodations currently?
Currently, public accommodations is the whole area of, hotels and motels and
bathrooms and sports teams. Is that?
I said bathrooms, sports teams, athletic events.
Let's get into more specific policy issues. There are some women who say, and I've talked to a few who say this. They say, hey, I'd like some privacy in the bathroom. I'd prefer not to encounter naked penises, frankly. They say even that the penis is a telltale sign that someone is a male. I mean, there are people who kind of really bought into the rumor that only men have penises. How do we account for that? How do you respond to that?
What I would say is that most transgender people that I know, and it's a very, I think, distinct minority of people. We're talking not about a lot of people. I think a person who's a woman's bathroom, who identifies as transgender, really does think of themselves as a female. So how we go about trying to, respect their basic right to live, I think will be, of course, an important part of this law. And with bathrooms, bathrooms are, where you want to take this conversation instead of the basic right to this life is something that I'm kind of mystified that you're kind of not focusing on first. So we're going straight to controversy over bathrooms. I think this interview is over.
I think this interview is over.
I just have one last question.
The interview's over.
You want to know what is a woman?
Please. Let's turn off the camera.
So we're going to end the interview. If you guys could please come up in front of the office.
I just wanted to know. Okay, I came all this way to know what. Those are fair questions. I just wanted to know what is a woman.
You're not going to find out.
My trip to California isn't providing many answers. But at least I'm making new friends.
You worry about kids walking around out here?
No, because I raised 2 daughters. They're 2 of the most well-adjusted adults. They grew up around naked people, and there's been studies that have shown that children raised around non-sexual nudity actually have fewer hang-ups when they're adults.
People do have hang-ups. There's a lot of things hanging right now during this conversation. Can anyone be any gender they want to be? Can a man become a woman if he wants to be?
What people do, if that's personal choice, people can live the life they want to. I'm trying to live the life I want to, an authentic life, and
that's why
I respect other people's rights to choose what they want to do.
Well, why are you asking a gay man as to what it means to be a woman?
You should be asking women what it means to be a woman, especially trans women, who what it means to be a woman.
I'm asking all kinds of people. Can anyone have an opinion about it?
Only people who are women. Gay men don't know nothing about what it means to be a woman.
Have you told gay men here in San Francisco that they're not allowed to talk about this?
No. But I have. It's not like I come around and say what a gay man is allowed to be.
So you're saying if you're not a woman, then you shouldn't have an opinion.
Where does a guy get a right to say what a woman is? Women only know what women are.
Are you a cat?
No.
Can you tell me what a cat is?
This is actually a genuine mistake. I am sorry I even came up here.
You want to tell us what a woman is?
If my friend in the purple hat is correct, and only women can tell me what a woman is, I guess I need to go where the women are. What is a woman? Can you tell me that? Well, you're at the Women's March. You must have some idea. So, I see girls, vagina. Does that mean that they're the only people who can get pregnant?
If men can get pregnant, too, I think they want the right to choose.
But men can get pregnant?
We're saying someone who is born as a woman that identifies as a man.
Is that a real man? It's a real man?
Yeah.
So men can get pregnant?
Yes,
yeah,
we're saying
yes.
They have the parts.
Is it just women that give birth, or is it?
I guess, yeah.
So men can give
anyone
birth too.
With a vagina.
Well, that could be a man or a woman.
Well, I mean, I think that's the whole point, right? That it's fluid. The way that we define these things changes a lot.
What are you doing here?
I'm asking these questions.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out what a woman is. That's why I'm here. And this is the Women's March. I figured it's a good place to find out. I've come all this way to ask that question. Can anyone tell me what a woman is?
You are not here for women. We ask you to leave.
What is that? What? Am I harassing? Ask that question. What is a woman? Can anyone here at the Women's March tell me what a woman is? How about you tell me what a woman is and I'll put a mask on? Sir, tell me what a woman is and I'll put a mask on. Please, if one person could tell me what a woman is. Do you guys know what a woman is by any chance?
I've been all over America. I still can't find an answer. Maybe I'm looking too close to home.
He's flying to Africa.
Talk to you guys thousands of miles from America, so thank you for inviting us into your tribe. First of all,
I can say it is my pleasure to meet you and feel most welcome, but you're here to learn with me. I'm here to learn with you too.
Great. What's the right form here?
Is this
with the elbow?
Yeah.
I mean, they're laughing, so I guess it's not good, but I thought it was pretty good. Not good enough to be a man yet in your tribe, but what does a man do? What are his roles within the tribe?
At the role of a man, you need to work for your woman. Secondly, to have children. If you have children and you don't have something to feed them, you are not still a man.
It was the best raw kidney I've had in my life. What if a man decides that he wants to do the roles of a woman?
In Maasai community, it will not exist at all.
It doesn't exist? What if a man decides that his gender identity is woman?
A woman has its own duty, and a man has its own duty, and a lady cannot do the duty of a man, and a man cannot do a duty of a woman.
Can a man become a woman?
No.
What about a transgender? Transgender?
No. If you look like, if you want to become a lady but you're a man, you have something wrong. Something wrong in your family, something wrong in you.
What about if someone was non-binary?
Come again?
Non-binary?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like non... Like someone is
you're not a woman, you're not a man.
Yeah, someone's like, someone is neither. There's something else. Is that...
He's saying we have never seen things like those. For a man, he has a penis. For a woman, he has a vagina. So we know this is a lady, this is a man.
What if it's a woman with a penis?
Boy.
Is that
in the money they're getting and double.
People are laughing. Is that a dumb question?
They're just laughing because they have never heard something like that. This is their first time.
They never heard it before.
A woman have a penis, and she is a woman.
In my country, I can't go a day without hearing it. We hear it every day. So in my country, sometimes you'll hear people say, a man will say that I'm a woman trapped in a man's body. And so they say that I have a woman trapped inside me.
Ara igro. They want to know a woman has the breast.
Yes.
Secondly, he has a vagina.
Vagina.
And the question is, does this man deliver?
Does he deliver babies? No, not as far as I know.
The question is, let's say if you want to sleep a woman, definitely you'll do sex.
Sex with a woman. Yeah.
And you f*** the vagina, is it? But for the man, where do you f***? You have that question.
I don't know all the logistics of it. Based on what I'm saying, would you ever want to move to America?
They say no, never.
What is a woman if you had to give it a definition?
She says a woman delivered, a man cannot.
So it sounds like you don't spend a lot of time thinking about gender. You just kind of live your lives, you don't think much about it.
He said, no, because we believe that's a God plan.
God's plan?
He's saying that I'm shocked on what you are telling me.
He's shocked?
Yeah.
The Maasai people don't think much about gender.
but they have a firm sense of their identity. It's clear that gender ideology is a uniquely Western phenomenon. So where did all this come from? Who came up with it? And why?
Matt, I want to show this to you. You're a parent, right? Okay? It's perfectly normal for 10 years and up. Here's just one page I want you to see here.
For 10 and up, huh?
It's unspeakable what these people have done to our children.
When did that start? When was it decided that we need to start teaching kids about this stuff at such a young age?
So I'll answer that with one word. Kinsey. Kinsey was a social reformer. He wanted to rid society of Judeo-Christian values when it came to sexuality. And he worked very hard to do that, and I would say he succeeded.
Kinsey would be very happy with our culture today. His idea was that children are sexual from birth, that we're all inherently sexual creatures from cradle to grave. He believed that true happiness is found in a life of perverse sexual experimentation, no matter the age.
What came out is that his research was fraudulent.
Kinsey based his fraudulent conclusions on data he collected from convicted sex offenders and child molesters. His research was conducted in prisons, not everyday America. He also performed horrific sexual experiments on children, some under the age of one. His most influential book, Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, contains an infamous chart called Table 34, which documents the orgasms of very young kids, including babies as young as 5 months old. But instead of suffering the consequences for his heinous actions, he was and still is celebrated by academia and Hollywood. His ideas form the foundation for sexual education in public schools today. How do we get from this to you can choose your own gender?
Okay, well, now we have another very important character, and his name was John Money.
John Money was a psychologist and professor at Johns Hopkins University. Gender ideology was his brainchild. In fact, he coined the terms gender identity and gender roles. And according to Money, babies are gender neutral at birth. And ultimately, environment determines whether a person is a man or a woman.
Money was telling the world about his theory that a boy could be raised as a girl and do just fine, and vice versa.
And so Money tried out his theory on two young twin boys, the Reimer twins.
When the twins were 8 months old, and they went to be circumcised, the first twin, whose name was Bruce, something went wrong with the machinery, and his penis was burnt off. They stopped and didn't do a second circumcision on the other twin, as you might imagine. And the parents, of course, didn't know what to do. How are they going to raise this child?
John Money convinced Bruce's parents to transition him into a girl. Money also conducted sexually abusive experiments on the twins throughout their childhood, including forcing them to simulate sex acts on each other.
He reported up to the age of 10 that this was a complete success. Well, it wasn't true.
The results were a disaster. Bruce could never fully accept his female identity. Eventually, his parents told him the truth, and he chose to transition back to a boy, taking the name David. As an adult, David spoke out about the abuse and the damage done to him by John Money.
The girls would do their things with their Barbies and things like that, and that wouldn't interest me.
Mm-hmm.
And things such as trucks and building forts and, getting to the odd fist fight and
mm-hmm.
climbing trees. That's the kind of stuff that I like, but it was unacceptable. So I've never...
As a girl?
As a girl, I had no place to fit in.
The trauma that he and his brother and his entire family went through left deep scars. His brother died of an overdose when he was 38, and then David committed suicide.
There was never a retraction or an apology from John Money. Instead, his ideas were adopted by mainstream psychology, and they formed the basis of gender ideology today. Why don't more people know about John Money and Alfred Kinsey?
Evidently, there are forces that don't want this information out.
I never fit. I was an alpha female, a sales executive that kind of just didn't fit in any box. when psychologists or somebody that I was in love with or whatever said that I was in the wrong body, I started to think, well, maybe I am. I'm a biological woman that medically transitioned to appear like a male through synthetic hormones and surgery. I will never be a man. Is it transphobic for me to tell the truth? Why is it that a couple hundred years from now, if you dug up my body, they're going to go, yeah, that was a woman. Had babies.
Can you tell me about the procedures that you had?
I've had 7 surgeries. I've had 1 stress heart attack. I've had a helicopter life ride with pulmonary embolism. I've had 17 rounds of antibiotics. I had 6 inches of hair on the inside of my urethra for 17 months. Nobody would help me, including the doctor that did this to me because I lost my insurance. I get infections every 3 to 4 months. I'm probably not going to live very long.
Was there any real discussion of the risks and the side effects? And
no. No, there's not. And I know that people want to think that there is, but there's not. The truth is that medical transition is experimental. We have studies that said that medical transition helps mental health with kids. They've all been retracted, modified, changed. But the only long-term study tells us 7 to 10 years is when transgender people are the most suicidal.
After
surgery. But that's transphobic to say. For the first time in history, a marginalized group has a huge dollar sign on the top of their head. We have 5 children's hospitals in the United States promoting that.
And what?
That's a phalloplasty. That's a bottom surgery. We have 5 children's hospitals in the United States telling girls that they can be boys at $70,000 a pop. In a surgery that has a 67% complication rate, that will kill me from infection that I can't sue on, we're butchering a generation of children because nobody's willing to talk about anything. I have 3 kids at the age that they're doing this to kids. I'm not transphobic. I love my kids and I love other people's kids and you should too. This is wrong on so many levels.
Can kids consent? Do you think kids are capable of consenting to
this? No, they're not. Being a parent is loving the hell out of your kids and helping them see around corners.
What's the youngest patient that you've operated on?
The youngest patient I've done vaginoplasty on is age 16.
Do you worry that minors just don't understand enough about themselves? They're not neurologically developed enough yet to make permanent life-altering decisions?
Absolutely not.
A young person's self-perception, one day they may be clear, the next day they may be totally confused and not sure, and you're affirming it with hormones that have never been used in this way in the field of medicine.
You're talking about puberty blockers?
Blockers and then opposite sex hormones.
And at what age does the medical transition begin with medication?
So medical affirmation begins when the patient says they're ready for it. So that could be a kiddo who is just starting puberty and panicking because they're getting breast buds or their penis is getting bigger and busier and they're worried about all kinds of masculine changes. And that way, puberty blockers, which are completely reversible and don't have permanent effects, are wonderful because we can put that pause on puberty. It's like if you were listening to music, you put the pause on and we stop the blockers and puberty would go right back to where it was. The next note in the song just delayed that period of time.
You can just pause puberty.
No, you can't.
And then pick it up?
No, you can't.
For the future.
No, you can't. How many studies do they have, long-term studies, on hormone blockers for children? None.
I just spoke a month or two ago with a mother whose 14-year-old daughter was put on blockers. They discovered after 2 years, this 14-year-old girl has osteoporosis. That's something that, like, old women get.
How can doctors assure parents that a certain medicine is totally safe? Based on what you're saying, they can't possibly know that.
How can they be removing the healthy breasts of 15-year-old girls? How can they be sterilizing kids? How can this whole thing be happening, Matt?
Every child that they convince is transgender and in need of medical transition, it generates $1.3 million to pharma. And we're believing a pharmaceutical company, Lupron, hormone blockers, reversible, so they say. Well, the truth is that in 2003, Lupron was sued and deemed a criminal enterprise by the U.S. government. They paid the most fine of any pharmaceutical company at that time, $874 million, wrote a check.
Is Lupron chemical castration?
Yes. We're giving it to pedophiles, aren't we? We're giving it to people that are dying, and we're giving it to kids, telling them that they were born in the wrong body and it's completely safe.
One of the drugs used is Lupron, right, which has actually been used to chemically castrate sex offenders.
You know what? I'm not sure that we should continue with this interview because it seems like it's going in a particular direction.
Well, you're a medical professional.
I am a medical professional.
You don't want to talk about the drugs that you give to kids? Or?
Again, I'm a physician and I use medication. You're choosing exploitive words. Drugs I give to kids.
I'm choosing a
chemical
word that was in a dictionary.
That's not a correct term for puberty blocking.
I could look it up on my phone, but I'm pretty sure if I looked it up.
You can look it up on your phone.
So is medical definition, the administration of a drug to bring about a marked reduction in the body's production of androgens and especially testosterone.
And I'm saying, as a pediatrician who takes care of hundreds of these kids, when you use that terminology, you are being malignant and harmful.
I mean, there are some who would say that giving chemical castration drugs to kids is malignant and harmful.
It's about the context of caring for a child and seeing the suffering that kids can have that have not been in affirmative home situations.
What do you say to the claim that, well, we have to do this for these kids because if we don't, they'll kill themselves. They'll resort to drugs and self-harm.
A lot of them were hurting themselves. A lot of them were suicidal before they even discovered gender. That is never part of the discussion. And they say, what would you rather have? A living daughter or a dead son? If this is what the professionals are saying, it's terrible emotional blackmail.
Hello?
Hey, is this?
This is, yes.
Hey, it's Matt Walsh. Where are you right now?
I'm in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada right now.
Are you able to leave?
I'm not able to leave BC. I can't even go to another province in Canada right now. And it's because I'm technically out on bail.
What happened exactly? How exactly did this get into the courts to begin with?
Right. So what happened is we set up a meeting with BC Children's Hospital. And according to the BC Children's Hospital website, there's going to be a thorough evaluation. And I'm thinking, good, this is going to be the end of it all. You're going to clearly see that my child is not the opposite sex. So my ex-wife brings my child into BC Children's Hospital. I get a call less than an hour into that appointment is that they were going to pump her full of cross-sex hormones within the hour. And I put a halt to that. I said, no. They agreed to stop. For the moment, they figured, well, let's get the dad on board too. This is all going to be better. Let's just get everybody on the same page. I said, it's not going to happen. So I get a letter from BC Children's Hospital in December of 2018, and it says that under the BC Infants Act, they will start injecting my child with cross-sex hormones, and I have 2 weeks to respond with legal action if I so choose. And so that's how I ended up in court, because I didn't respond with legal action.
So you called your daughter a she, and you went to jail for that?
It's considered criminal violence to not use the preferred pronouns. It is no different than, let's say, I were to take a broomstick and whack one of my kids over the head. So So they were treating it in a similar fashion, that misgendering, mispronouncing my child was the equivalent of family violence.
Is she on the hormone pills now?
She is. The court ordered that she could do whatever she wanted.
2010 until, I would say, 2016, I would say 80% of my clients were trans youth. Now it is, you identify, you take hormones, you do surgery. There isn't any other pathways.
So if you have two parents, one parent wants to affirm the trans identity, the other parent doesn't, who wins that battle?
The one who wants to affirm.
Every time?
Every single time. The goal is to get the parents to affirm the kid.
There's no such thing as a gender-affirming therapist. That's a contradiction in terms.
Why?
Because you don't affirm if you're a therapist. It's not your business to affirm. You come to see me because there's something wrong. Maybe you come to see me because a destructive element of you is wreaking havoc in your life. I'm on the side of the part of you that wants to aim up, man. That's what I'm on the side of. Okay, now I don't know what that means in your case. But we're going to talk about it. Am I going to affirm what you think? No, it's not up to me to affirm it. You don't get a casual pat on the back from a therapist for your pre-existing axiomatic conclusions. That's not therapy. That's a rubber stamp.
Is anybody at any point explaining to these kids the real long-term consequences of hormones and puberty blockers?
I don't think they're explaining it to the kids. That has frightened me, that it's become... that we're even talking to the kids about it at 10. We're presenting it in schools.
So this generation, they're the lab rats.
Biological sex, binary. I mean, binary for like 100 million years, longer than that. Temperament is not binary. Temperament or personality.
So it's gender. Temperament is gender?
Well, gender is not a good word because it's vague. And it isn't measurable.
So do we need it? Why can't we just say temper? What do we even need the word gender for?
Well, I don't need it. But what I would say is that people who talk about the diversity in gender are actually talking about diversity in personality and temperament, but they don't know it. You can have a masculine temperament if you're a woman. Maybe 1 in 10 women have the average temperament of a man. And you can have feminine men temperamentally. And it's not that uncommon because the differences between men and women temperamentally aren't that great. There are masculine girls. There are feminine boys. What are we going to do about that? Carve them up?
You, as someone who started your professional life, you know, transgender care.
Yeah.
Now you're sitting here talking to me. I'm a dangerous man, I've been told.
Mm-hmm.
Are you worried about reprisals? Are you worried about how this is going to play among your professional peers?
I am worried that I can't have conversations with any other peers. I don't know any other peer that will speak to me around these things that question it. I just don't think developmentally this is helpful to our children.
You step wrong as a therapist. You say the wrong thing once and like your bloody career is over. And now it's the same with physicians. How's that going to work? You're going to go have an honest conversation with your physician when he's terrified out of his mind, if he'll say something politically incorrect during the diagnostic process. Hey, man, you're sick with whatever you want to be. See you later. You want a prescription for something?
I left academia because the climate had become too stifling politically, especially when it comes to the topic of gender identity and the science of gender. It is absolutely impossible to do good research. You basically have to decide beforehand what you're going to find so that you don't upset activists, and that is not how you do science.
Why has this shift occurred where all of a sudden gender and sex have become so politically and culturally charged?
There's a really ugly history between sex researchers and transgender activists. In the past, if any sex researcher spoke out about science that went against activist orthodoxy or particular narratives that activists wanted to promote, they would basically have their personal and professional reputations ruined. So what you see is that only experts who toe the party line and say the things that activists like, those are the people who get attention, those are the people who get lifted up in the media. And also, I would say people are incentivized to go along with the activist narratives and gender ideology because that helps their career.
Trans is very cool. Trans is a way of giving yourself value. Given the way society at the moment is functioning. All of the things that used to give us anchors of identity have become very fluid or very volatile in recent years. And into that context, I think what you find then is new identities start to fill the void or the vacuum. Whereas in the past, I might have got my sense of self-worth from being part of the village where I grew up. Now I might get my sense of self-worth through being part of the online community that I connect with, or part of the sexual identity community.
So now we are seeing kids that are identifying as animals going to school, and they are purring instead of answering questions, and they meow, and the teachers are not allowed to question it because it's considered a queer identity.
So you have kids that are going to school and they're saying, I'm a cat.
Mm-hmm.
And the teachers have to affirm them as a cat.
Yes. So it's
schools
not
are like
the
literal zoos now, basically.
They are.
I am a 27-year-old transgender woman. I am a Wolftharian and a member of the furry fandom.
When and how did you discover this inner wolfness?
Probably around age 10 or 11. I was...
There's so much to this. It's so brilliant. The psychiatrist is just speaks with such clarity in a definitive way. My favorite is a store owner who put up the sign, if you've got a dick, you're not a chick. And then this transgender councilman comes down and says he's a woman. A transgender woman is a woman. And he replies, he said, well, it becomes, and thinks he's a sheepdog. Does that mean he's a sheepdog? And you got kids who think they're cats and wolves. I mean, I'm telling you, listen, this documentary is as important to American culture today as Dr. Strangelove is to the world universally. And I regard that as the most important film ever made. Check it out. Check it out. That world will be absolutely amazing.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global